All right, my friends, we are on Chavches Amid Beis. We are in 28b, and if you flip just a little bit, you'll notice that, God willing, very soon, I guess right before Pesach, I mean, I don't know if there's any real Hashgacha Pratis to it per se, but God willing, we'll be finishing the second Perek of Sukkah very soon. Okay, so maybe that means by the time we hit Sukkis coming around this year, who knows? I haven't calculated it, but I'm sure we'll hopefully be close to finishing the Masechta. So that'd be nice if somehow it works out that way. You know, like when you're making a scene, oh, it just happens to come about during the 9 days, right? So we'll see what happens. Okay, so we're on 28b, we're on Chavches Amid Beis, and we are up to the words Amar Mar. It's about a third the way down. We made a good dent in the Amid last time, okay? So we're a third way down, Amar Mar, right? We're done talking about women and converts, and now we're talking about children. You have the place? All right, here we go. Amar Mar, Kol. So if you remember, we had a pasuk which said Kol HaEzrach. Let me bring it back up here. It said Kol HaEzrach BeYisrael Yishuv HaSukkos, that all residents of the Jewish people, they shall dwell in sukkahs. Now, what does the word kol come to include? So we learned last time, kol includes kol rabos ketanim. It includes ketanim, children. Now we're going to talk about soon what kind of children. Ay, vatnan, noshim va'avanu ketanim b'termin ha'sukkah. Didn't we learn in our own Mishnah that children amongst, also servants and women are exempt from sukkah? So I don't get it. Are kids obligated in the mitzvah of sukkah? Or are they not obligated? So kasha. So even, it's not just simply that there's a bar and bas mitzvah age, but even within the stage of being a minor, there's a breakdown. There's a katan that is not higia lechinach. There's a katan who's not yet reached that age of chinach. And then there's a child who, every Rishon and his grandmother has an opinion. I say my grandma. I have a lot of respect for grandmothers, by the way, Bubby. I see you over there. It's just an expression I use. Every Rishon and his grandmother has an opinion on what exactly is the age. Is it six? Is it seven? Is it eight? Nine? There's a lot of opinions on it. But okay, so a child who has reached the stage of education, they can have some appreciation of the mitzvah. They can gain something from it. So that child is then obligated in mitzvah sukkah. But wait a minute. Katan shegiel echinach midrabbanan. How are we inferring this from a pasuk in the Torah when we know that children are only obligated in the mitzvah rabbinically because of chinuch? So the answer is, and we've seen this time and time again, midrabbanan ikra esmachta ba'almahu. Yes, the origin is rabbinical, but they attribute it to a pasuk. Again, there's two main interpretations of what esmachta can mean. Either the rabbi just simply used it as kind of like a memory device. The other way to interpret it is that Hashem gave some divine permission to the rabbi, saying, by the way, here's a suggested thing you might want to do, and I'm presenting you with a pasuk to take advantage of it. Okay, so that's a little bit more of a mystical approach to the matter. Very fine. Okay. Katan she'eino tzarich li'imo. Now, we said in the Mishnah there's a difference between a child who needs his mother and who does not need his mother. That's how we draw the line. So, okay, but what does it mean to, what does it mean? Like, what do you need your mother for? I mean, I needed my parents to still pay my tuition, even after I was bar mitzvah. So where do we draw the line? So here's how we draw the line according to the Gemara. Two opinions. Hei dami, katan she'eino tzarich li'imo. Amri dveyayanai kol shenifna vein sorry kol shenifna vein ima mekanachto. Once a kid is potty trained, essentially, he makes a mess. He could basically do the whole thing all by himself. That's when he does not need his mother anymore. Rabbi Shimon Omer kol shenir kore ima. Any child who wakes up, it does not cry ima when he wakes up. Right, this has been our dynamic, which is Talia like will wake up and she'll in the middle of the night and she'll cry for some. She'll cry. I'll come in. Right, I tell Marissa, don't worry. I'm going to do you a favor. I'm going to take this one. And she says, "No, mommy, And I'm like, I'm sorry, Marissa, I tried. This one's on you. So, but you know, this is what children do in the middle of the night. They wake up because I was wondering. I was like reading the Gemara over here. Why does it say he calls for his mother? Why not for his dad? You know, don't dads count? So, okay. Apparently not. Gedolim nami kara, but don't older children also call for their mother as well? That's not unique just to a younger child. Ela'ema koshnir ve'eno kore ima ima. When a child is incessantly saying mommy, 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 that's when you know that child is too young, too dependent on his mother, not independent enough to be really at that stage of chinuch just yet. Okay, so that those are the litmus tests we use to kind of determine when a child is at that stage that we should be making sure that they shake lulav and esrog and they do all the mitzvot similar to an adult would in order to train them. Now, it's an interesting question. Is it brought up in Tosos here? I don't think it is. But there's a general question. We talked about the chinuch sugya, if you remember, way back when, at the beginning of the Masechta. Do you remember the story that came up at the beginning of the Masechta? That was how we got into a whole discussion about chinuch. So it was a story about Hilni Hamalka, Queen Hilni. And if you remember, there was a machlokis in the first Mishnah between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim about whether there's a 20 amah limit on a sukkah. And Rabbi Yehuda was trying to say, well, we see they went into this sukkah that was really tall and she brought her kids in there. But then he said, wait a minute, but kids aren't obligated in the sukkah. So how's that a good proof? Ah, but so she had this X amount, I forget exactly what it was, X amount of kids. And you know, when you calculate things, how much they have to be spaced across, one of them certainly needed the mitzvah of chinuch. And she was trying to make sure that her child got proper chinuch. So that's a place that came up. So it's an interesting question. There's one machlokus if the mitzvah of chinuch is only incumbent upon the father or if it's also incumbent upon the mother. But even if we grant that both parents share in the legal obligation of chinuch, there's another shita of Tosos that comes up in Brachos, I believe, that actually it's not just simply incumbent upon the parents, it's incumbent upon the child themselves. Which is leads to a bit of a conundrum because you're only obligated in mitzvos when you're bar and bas mitzvah, right? And one of the mitzvos in the Torah that tells us that we have to listen to the rabbis is the mitzvah of lo sasor, that tells us we should not stray to the right or left of what they say. So if I'm not yet obligated to keep mitzvos, to, you know, mitzvos in the Torah, and it's the Torah that authorizes the rabbis, so what power do the rabbis have to obligate a child in mitzvos, right? What obligation do they have? So Rav Elchanan Wasserman has a piece where he explains like it's the will of the Torah. There's an idea of a ratzon ha-Torah that doesn't operate off legal mechanisms, and that's how he. I have to look back at the piece, but my recollection is that's how he explains that children could still be obligated for themselves in the chinuch. You know where this comes up? This comes up in the question of can a katan be motzi an adult in benching, in birchas hamazon, grace after meals? So the issue is that you have to be on the same level of obligation as the person you're trying to be motzi. This is the issue of women laying Megillah for a man. Because even though women are obligated Megillah, many hold that women have a different obligation than men do. To listen to Megillah, not to read Megillah. So they can't be motzi men, and some even argue be motzi other women. We did a shiur on this a while back. It's on Wani Torah. If you're curious, I can send it to you. So the Tosa says, though, you could have an interesting case in which the on a d'oraisa level, to be obligated biblically in Birchas HaMazon, you need to eat a kedei svia. You need to eat enough that it, Paul, help me out again. Is it satiated or sated? I remember you got to the bottom of this for me.
Sated is satisfied, satiated is oversatisfied.
So I guess sated then. Okay, very good. So so thank you, Paul. So you have to be sated. But if you only eat a kezias, the amount of an olive, you're only obligated benching midrabanan. So what if a child eats enough to be sated and an adult only eats enough of a kezias, so now they're both obligated rabbinically. That right? It's not like they're, if the child only ate a kezias, it'd be trei derabanan. It would be two steps removed. But now they're both single derabanan obligated. So maybe a child could be motzi an adult if they both share a single rabbinical level obligation. So that's the that. But then the question is, what do you mean? Children aren't obligated in chinuch. It's the parents' obligation. Ah, that's the proof that you see that children can actually have an inherent obligation that is, if they don't have a parent figure who is going to show them the ropes, they still have an obligation independent of their parents. Okay, so there you go, guys. We tied it back into the beginning of the Masechta. Let's go forward.
Well, I have a question.
Yes.
You said that a woman is not obligated in the chinuch at the same level as the father. And the question I have is, if the father is not present, he's off to war, he's on a business trip, he died, does her level of obligation rise to his level?
Yeah, so I don't think, I think you basically either fundamentally hold she's obligated or she's not. There's some Ian Shear where you could go into where there's different levels of chinuch obligation, but generally in the absence of the father, some hold it goes straight to the community, becomes a communal obligation. So it wouldn't necessarily go to the mother per se, at least as an inherent obligation. It may just operate as a communal obligation, and well, she's the best representative of the community to fill the shoes of the father who's no longer there. But alas, it's been a while since I've analyzed the sugya, so I probably should go back and review that. That's a good question. All right, my friends, going forward in the Gemara, I see. Okay, my apologies. I realize I may have mixed up the 7:45, 7:30 for some people. I told different people different things. My apologies. Okay, so we are. I guess it's a good thing that I stole some time over there with that extra stuff. If you're just logging on now, you didn't miss that much in terms of the Gemara just yet. So where are we up to? We're up to Mice of the Yolda Kalasa, the last piece before the Mishnah. So if you remember, at the end of the Mishnah, what happened was that base Shammai for his, I think it was his daughter-in-law, so he had a grandkid, Mazel Tov, and they removed the roof where she slept, and they put, presumably they put schach over there. That way her child who was sleeping with her could already fulfill the mitzvah. So the Gemara asks, Maisa Listor, why would the Mishnah cite a story which seemingly contradicts what the Mishnah is ruling? The Mishnah says you're only obligated in the chinuch of the children themselves are obligated only once they're at the stage of chinuch, but not when they're a baby. So why would the Mishnah then provide for us a story which seemingly contradicts the ruling of the Mishnah? So the answer is chesuri mechzavah yitani. You got to use the right the art scroll and fill in the in between the lines. Here's how we do it. Right before art scroll was made, the Gemara was already at v'hachi tani. Ushamai, this is how you have to read the Mishnah. Ushamai Machmir, whereas Shammai was more stringent and believed that any child should be fulfilling the mitzvah of Sukkah, a boy. Umaisa Nami, and indeed there was an incident, the Yolda Kalasa Shel Shammai Hazaken, that the daughter in law of Shammai Hazaken had a child. Ufichesamaziva, Usichech Alhamita Bashil HaKatan. They removed the basically the material of the roof, and they put schacha over it. And if you remember the halachos that we learned in the first parak, as long as there's less than dalid amos from the wall to the schach, then we could apply dofen akuma in order so that it could be kosher. So they wouldn't have necessarily even have to remove the entire roof above her. It could have just been enough that there was less than dalid amos to every side of the walls, or at least three walls. That way we use dofen akuma, right? Like the bent over wall, right? That extends, and that'd be kosher. I didn't look into it. No one, I'm sure maybe someone brings it up, but presumably that seems to be what was happening. Okay. And with that, my friends, we are up to the next Mishnah. The next Mishnah and the final Mishnah before we conclude the parak. So God willing, we'll get to Chav Tes Amud Aleph momentarily, and then next week, God willing, we will be completing the second parak of Sukkah in Yirtzeh Hashem. Here we go, my friends. This also might be a more of a familiar teaching from Maseches Sukkah. Chances are, if you've never seen it inside, you may have heard someone paraphrase it. Kol Shiva Seyama Adamosa Sukkaso Keva Beso Arai. This is something we should be familiar with at this point. that for 7 days, one leaves their house, they make their house secondary, and they make their sukkah their primary residence. Nothing new for us at this moment. Yardu geshamim, but let's say it starts to rain. Meyosai mutter lefanos, when are you allowed to pick up and go back into your house? So Misha tisrach hamikveh mishalo, when his kind of like his porridge, his stew. What's their rendering of the word mikveh? How do they translate it?
Porridge.
Porridge. Oh, okay. That's soup porridge. Okay. One of my options worked. Shkayach, thank you, Toby. So when your porridge starts getting ruined by the rain, mashal madav redome, le'eved sheba limzo kos rabo. This is likened to a servant who is bringing a kos of wine before his master, ushafach lo kiton alpana, and then the master, presumably it's the master, though there's an alternative reading, takes it and throws it back in his face. So that's what it's like when we go out to the sukkah, particularly on the first night when we're obligated to go out of our way to be in the sukkah, and then it starts raining. That's a siman klala. And by the way, guys, Pesach's almost here, which means we stop saying Mashiv Ruach, we stop saying the Saint Talamatar at the beginning of Pesach. But when Sukkot comes, you would think also the same way we switch things up at the beginning of Pesach, we should switch things up on the first day of Sukkot. But actually, we wait till the end. And why is that, Toby? Looks like
and it doesn't rain on the Sukkah.
Exactly, because it'd be a Siman Klala. This is the beginning of Maseches Tainis. I don't know. Maybe that's our next Masechta. Who knows? So because it would be a Siman Klala if it rained earlier. Now, the funny thing is we only start Mashiv HaRuach. We still have to wait later for Besein Tal Matar. Because you ever wonder what's the difference between the two? So Mashiv HaRuach is more just earning God's favor. We're praising God on his power to control the rain. But then there's what's called Shelas Gishamim, which is asking for rain. And if we actually only ask for rain, I believe for Eretz Yisrael, it's the seventh of Mar Cheshvan. And for us in the diaspora, so for Bavel, it was like, was 60 days later? And but then, for us, basically, it kind of got to November 22nd. But then the Julian calendar, I mixed these things all up. They basically, what happened was, solar year is not a perfect 365. It's 365, I think, 11 minutes. And one of the popes realized that things were awry. So they jumped ahead of like 2 weeks or something. And that's how we wind up having December 4th and December 5th in our Siddurim. You look at earlier commentaries, they are talking about November 22nd. Now, I'm thinking about this sugya a lot right now because I had this guy, Rabbi Eli Fisher. He's like, he did a lot of cool stuff. He translated a lot of Pini Halakha into English. He does a lot of cool stuff. So I interviewed him recently on a tshuva of the rush about this topic of a Saint Talmud or Shias Geshamim. And I always have to look up the sources before, so I can intelligently interview people. So this is fasting. So the rush is one of the three pillars of the Torah. The Torah is the code of law that then got a little bit streamlined into the Shulchan Aruch by Rav Yossi Karo. So the rush is kind of one of the pillars of our halakhic tradition. And he's sitting on his porch one day on the first day of Pesach, and there are people hanging out with him. And he's like, let me tell you something. There's been something that's like really grinded my gears all my life, which is I don't get it. Here we live in a region where we need rain between Pesach and Shavuos. And yet we stop saying the Saint Talmatar at the very moment when our region that we live in requires actual rain to come down between Pesach and Shavuos. So he tried this whole campaign to get people to continue saying the same Talmud Matar, but a lot of people were like, no, no, that's our minhag. We don't change our minhag. And so the rush was basically himself had to conform in the end of the day because he didn't want to start a fight. Toby.
Is there any significance attributed to a year like this when we get an extra month of saying what we started in December because of the extra Adar?
Yeah, so maybe for some years that would work out because it gets delayed by another month, you're saying.
In a right, year, we're saying a whole month longer.
No, that's a fair point. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Is that a simon of any sort or?
I'm not sure if he addresses the Jewish year part.
Yeah.
That's a good point. I have to look back more carefully at the tshuva. But it's just a fascinating tshuva also because I would think if the rush paskens something, you felt really strong about something, the rush says jump, you ask how high. And meanwhile, if you just, people were coming to him for life and death questions that he ruled on. And meanwhile, they couldn't trust him to adjust when they would save the same Talmudder. Isn't that remarkable? And, I find this is, and it's really true in my own experience. Like, you'll meet people, you could think of people yourself. I'm not going to use any names. It's no one on the Zoom here. Like, I can think of people who, they're not as careful when it comes to kashrus or it comes to insert typical areas of halacha. But if you use a different tune for duchening on yantif, then I'll just like, we've used that tune since the beginning of Maisa Bereishis, since the world was created. I'm like, this isn't even like a halachic issue. Why are we getting ourselves all excited about it? So that's kind of what it was. I mean, this is a halachic issue with St. Tom Arthur, but it's just remarkable how people are like, yep, whatever the rush says, he says, do this, do that, life and death issues. Okay, I trust the rush. But the St. Tom Arthur changing how we do our liturgy. And I went, I'm not going to listen to the rush on that one. What kind of reform rabbi is he? So that's just remarkable to see how certain things work out that way.
I remember one year when we were having a drought in the Northeast, and it was the middle of the summer, right? And I think it was a Lubavitcher Rebbe who paskened that we should be asking for rain.
Oh, okay. So, like I actually said, save the same Talmud for longer?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, maybe he hung his hat on the rush then. I'm not familiar with that stock. But something I've been thinking about doing was a Shir series, maybe something more substantive on profiles of like high profile cases where communities, sounds terrible, where rabbis wanted to institute certain policies in their communities, but they weren't able to do so. You see this phrase come up in, it starts in the Gemara, and it gets used a lot in rabbinic literature, Iyasher chayli abatline. If I had the power, I would abolish X, Y, and Z. So it comes up in the Gemara, I think, regarding some debate about Shemitah, practices during Shemitah. I think maybe even the Prosbol Sugya it was. I have to check back at that. And then, one instance that I remember offhand is Rav Yaakov Emden talks of, Rav Yaakov Emden is a very colorful figure. Rabbi J.J. Schachter, one of my rabbis, he did his dissertation on Rav Yaakov Emden. Very, very fun figure. So he tries to get everyone to stop saying Misha Beirachs on Shabbos because you're not allowed to make bakashas. You're not allowed to beseech God on Shabbos. You're not supposed to be doing that. But so he says at the end, and if I had the power, I would abolish it. But no one wants to listen to me. So I thought it'd be really, like a really cool shiur. Like you get a little bit like sociology and profiles of the rabbis, and you go through different halakhic issues. Where rabbis tried to put their foot down, but for some reason people didn't listen. It's worthy of a dissertation. I don't have the time to do that. But anyway, if it's of interest, maybe when we're done with all the Igros Moshe stuff, that'll be the next project. All right, my friends. Into the Gemara we go. Into the Gemara we go. Tanu Rabbanan. Kol Shiva Sayyamim Adam Osa Sukasu Keva Beso Arai. Okay, so we have a Braisa, which is telling us the same thing as our Mishnah, that your sukkah becomes your primary residence and your house is your secondary. Okay, that's a nice idea in the abstract. Ketzad, right? I remember when I was a rabbinic intern, I would give a sermon and I would say, and we should be good Jews and we should, do this. And then Rabbi Weissman, who was giving advice, is like, you can't just say be a good Jew. You have to give concrete examples of what it means to be a good Jew, right? So it's not just enough to say in the abstract, make the sukkah your primary residence. Like, okay, give me some bullet points on how to actually do that practically. So here we go. Hailo kelim naim, ma'al sukkah. Bring out your china. Bring out your nice kelim to sukkah. Betzos nolos, ma'al sukkah. You should bring out the nice linens and the nice, cloths out there. Ochel v'shosa metayel b'sukkah. You should eat, drink, you should hang out in the sukkah. So minahani mili, where do we learn this from? So I guess we now have another brisa. The Tanur Rabbanan, teishu kein tiduru. We learn it from the words of teishu. It says teishu in the pasuk, which teaches us you shall settle in the sukkah the same way you live in your home. We saw this concept many times. Mikan amru, kol shiva sayamim, just same thing again. Osa v'suko so keva. Ubeso arai, ketsad, hayelo kelim naim, ma'al sukkah, bring the nice candle to the sukkah, mitzvot snos ma'al sukkah, bring the nice cloths into the sukkah, ochel v'shos metal sukkah, you should eat and drink and hang out in the sukkah, and that is one added detail that we did not see in the previous brisa, umeshanim b'sukkah, you shall learn in the sukkah. Ah, so this brisa was firmer, no, I'm joking, this is the firmer one. The other one's like a pashut. Of course, you're going to be learning the sukkah. So eni zisel b'marava mikra umasna b'mitzvotasa utanui bar mitzvotasa. So Rava says that when you're studying mikra scriptures, you're studying Mishnah, that you do inside the sukkah. But when you are studying like a deeper analysis, you're going to do Gemara be'ian, that you do outside the sukkah. So why is Rava making a distinction when we have a braisa telling us you're always supposed to learn in the sukkah? So lo kasha, here's the distinction. Hub and migras hub and yune. One is when you are reviewing, right? There's like when I go traveling, so I always aspirationally bring a small Gemara with me. But then I realize when I'm traveling, it's very hard to kind of focus on a Gemara when you're traveling. I'm more likely to do better with something like a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, where I can like read a sif and then another sif. So when you're in the sukkah and maybe you don't have the air conditioning in there, it's not the most comfortable situation. You should still be fine with doing Shnai Mikra. You should still be able to review things you know already. But if you are going to be studying Gemara Be'ian and you need a full presence of mind, and you're not going to have that presence of mind in the sukkah, so then it's okay. You can go ahead, go back into your home. That way, you can learn properly there. Ki ha d'rabba bar chama, and this is we see this in a instance with Rabba bar chama. Ki habu kayame makme drachista. When they would come before drachista, maharti b'gemara badi hadadi, they would quickly review the gemara. Nevahadur ma'ani b'svara. And then they would go back and they would actually discuss the svara, the logic, the ideas, the concepts behind it. The point is that's demonstrating that, as I'm sure many of us can intuit, there's lighter forms of learning that doesn't take a lot of our intellectual capacity. And there are things that require us to really sit down and focus on them, right? So, maybe if there's like a kind of like an inspirational, motivational Torah thing that on the Parsha, so that is a little bit easier to do while you're doing the dishes. But if you want to really focus on learning a Tosos on the Gemara, that's something that you can't just do while you're in the pool. I remember, I think I shared this with you. I saw one of these programs. It wasn't you, Toby. Do you know the story I'm about to tell already? Or oh, okay.
I can almost guess. Go ahead.
Yeah, you're gonna, and you might remember this one once I say it. There was this program. It's funny, like a lot of the non-Orthodox Talmud programs, there's a few of them out there, not a lot. They always say Advanced Talmud, like it's automatically called Advanced Talmud when they do it. So there's this one called, I'll just say, called Svara. Like their thing is like LGBT Gemara learning. Like I kid you not, like I'm not even joking. Like that's their brand. And so their advertising was they showed their participants on these floaties in a pool with laminated Gemara pages. And I'm like, there's no way you're really learning Gemara Be'ian. I mean, like, look, I mean, I guess I'm wanting to say, oh, even when you're in the pool, you're trying to learn Torah. I mean, but you got to make up your mind. It's either advanced Talmud and you're sitting in a Beis Medrash, or it's not advanced Talmud and you're whatever you're doing in the pool. So there's certain things you could do in the pool. I don't recommend any learning while you're in the pool, honestly. But there's certain things you'd be able to intellectually do while you're in the pool. And there's certain things like if you're really learning Gemara Be'ian and you're really cracking your head and trying to learn new concepts and wrap your head around it, it's not happening while you're on a floaty in the pool with your. I only drink scotch, whatever those fancy drinks are that they make. Okay, help me out over here, guys. What are those?
My
Pina
tie.
colada.
Okay, exactly. Yeah, exactly. I just drink as a shout out to Irwin and Old Scotch lovers. I just go with the single malt, right, Paul?
Not on
Whatever you.
Pesach.
Yeah, Pesach's a rough one. Pesach's a rough one. Yeah, I have to pretend to like wine on Pesach. Paul.
The last two sugyas seem to be diametrically opposed. On one hand, you do everything to make the sukkah as comfortable and as magnificent as your home. So you bring out a nice table, you bring out a nice chairs. If anything, that would be the right place to learn Gemara.
Yes, I think the idea is like we aspire to, but at the end of the day, there's this constant balancing act. Now, on the one hand, the sukkah is supposed to be your primary residence, but it's still fundamentally, and we know experientially, it's a dir ha-sarai. It's a temporary dwelling. It'll never be as good as one's home. You're never, if it's as good as your home, Chazal were afraid that you would go back into your home. Remember, we had that Gezeiras Tikra, that you shouldn't have big boards for schach, because then it'll look like your home and you'll be like, what's the difference? So, you know, halachically, it's not supposed to be exactly like one's home. So it's comfortable enough that you could do other things in there. But if you know, obviously, look, if it's a nice day outside and you're comfortable and you're able to learn Gemara well in the sukkah, matova manayim, why not? But if it's too cold or if it's too hot and, you know, you're just thinking about that, you're thinking about getting comfortable and you don't have the presence of mind and the capacity to focus on the content in front of you, then, you know, you're not able to learn. You know, what are you gaining at that point? Okay. One last little piece of Gemara, which again, which once we started talking about things that you do inside and outside the sukkah, Amar Rav, mani mishtiya b'mitalasa. So kalim that are used for beverages you can keep in the sukkah. Mani michla bar mitalasa. You should take the food ones out, right? Once you're done with the dishes and you have like the chicken bones and residue on there, that you should probably bring back in your home and make sure to clean off, because otherwise it'll make the sukkah less pleasant. And then I just also play chatzva ushachil. So Rashi tells us that chatzva is a kad shel cheresh of mamayim. It's the potter earthenware vessel that's used to draw water, and a shachil is a bucket made out of wood. So those things are bar mitalasa. Those are things you keep outside the sukkah. Ushraga b'mitzlasa, whereas the flame, the torch, you keep inside the sukkah. The amrila bar mitzlasa, some say you keep it out of the sukkah. And velo pligi, it's not that they're arguing, but they're talking about two different kinds of sukkahs. Hub a sukkah gedola, hub a sukkah katana. In a large sukkah, it's okay. In a small sukkah, you can imagine you run into some kind of safety hazards, or you just simply don't have any room for it anymore. All right, so that brings us comfortably onto Chav Tesem and Aleph. And I think, Toby, I see you raising your hand over there.
Yeah, I have a silly question, but it's actually on my mind. Just listening to all this about bringing out your most beautiful things and whatever. So many people, myself right up there, tend to use plastic and paper and not, you know, to save my beautiful china from being broken, schlepping it back and forth. So is that actually wrong?
I don't want to say wrong, but you know what I do? We just use disposables all year round on Shabbos. Uh-huh. so I'm not doing anything worse, but when we come out to the sukkah. So that's
but if you don't do that, is it actually like not the right thing?
What some people do is like, you know, like you get like the fancier plastic, you know, the ones ones that can almost fool you that they're not disposable, you know, the ones that you like, you feel bad, like, you know, they're meant to be disposable, but like, oh, this is like such a nice, you know, so I feel like there's a middle ground over there.
See, what I'm kind of hoping you might say is that that kind of feeds into the, that he eats, drinks, and relaxes in the sukkah. I relax if I know I don't have to wash the dishes.
The anxiety. I mean, the thing also is that, you know, back then, like, I don't think they didn't have, like, you know, the plastic and paper plates that we have today. Okay. So, you know, they just didn't have that kind of concept. But I think the idea is you're supposed to just basically make yourself comfortable like you were at home. So, maybe just don't use china every week, and then that way you can justify it. All right, my friends. Wishing everyone a wonderful Shabbos. I am away effective 12 a.m. this morning, and we'll be back, God willing, Sunday morning for shir. The only thing just to keep in mind is that – what?
FYI, we do have wish key for Pesach.
Wish key, huh?
That's what it says on the bottle.
I love it.
All right. Well, I'll be here for Pesach, so I look forward. I may be, you know, the sheer Sunday morning, just a heads up, I might run a few minutes late because we have the family minion at the 8:30. So that tags on an extra 5-7 minutes. So if it starts more like 9:20, 9:25, again, I appreciate your flexibility. And Toby, we're set for coffee this Sunday.
Yep.
Okay. Shkoyach, Toby. Thank you.
I'm good.
Okay. Thank you. Wishing everyone a wonderful Shabbos.
Good Shabbos.